Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday or happy Sunday, wherever you may be in the USA or around the globe. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Well, we have a lot to cover. We have our rat-a-tat-tat, which is going to be probably the last segment or two of the show. We're going to talk about this unbelievable Build Back Better budget-busting social spending welfare plan. Just in general terms, I'm going to be bringing you a lot more details. You know, I don't like to get ahead of myself. So let's see how this kind of shapes up in the Senate. We already know the nonsense that's in the House. And we already know that a lot of the stuff that the House has in there is not going to pass muster in the Senate. So I'm just going to tell you some of the key points, and we're going to go over it in detail as it starts to shape up in the coming weeks. And I'm going to tell you what you can do to cut its legs out from under it, which really needs to happen. And our Republicans need to grow a spine. I'll tell you how to maybe stiffen their resolve just a bit. We're going to talk about blacks as a constituency of the Democratic Marxist Party and the disappointment that the Democratic Marxists have in the black community. You know, the Democratic Marxists are being abandoned. They're just not getting 98% of the black vote anymore. And that's really bad for black folks, because the Democratic Marxists are interested in keeping power. And if black folks can't help them do that, they're just going to replace them and they're going to punish them. And I'll tell you just a few ways that the Democratic Marxists are already starting to do that. And hopefully black Americans will wake up to it real quick, real fast, and without hesitation, because their lives and their food and their money and their fuel and their family safety is on the line. And then we're going to talk about our historical story, although it's really more contemporary than historical. If you remember last week, I brought you kind of food as a weapon. Food is a weapon of war throughout the ages. I mean, going back many thousands of years. Pretty fascinating history. And if you missed that show, please listen to it. At least listen to the historical portion, because it's the foundation for what we're going to talk about this week. And that is how a war is being waged on you through food. And not just you, but basically all the non-elite peoples of the planet Earth in every single country. And the more impoverished the country, the more substandard the country, the worse the war is and the more disastrous the effects. And this war on food, which is a war on you and a war on your freedoms, it's being waged quite intentionally. And it is a many-pronged attack. We're going to talk about a few of them this week. We're going to finish up next week. I think you'll find it eye-opening as we start connecting the dots of what's really going on out there, although hidden from you by mainstream media of every type, shape, and form. So that's going to be our show. Before I get started, I want to tell you I'm down signing books at the National Finals Rodeo. We're in booth 6615 on the upper level at the Convention Center, Cowboy Christmas. It's terrific. Lots of readers coming by, lots of new readers, and it's a great event. I mean, it is a healthy dose of Western Americana all in one spot. But I've noticed in my travels, if you want to call them, around Las Vegas, and I don't go to the strip and I don't go to, you know, the casinos and all that stuff, but I'm a pretty acute observer of other people and of situations and of environments, and I've noticed some really interesting things here in the 4 or 5 days that we've been here, and I'm going to share them with you because it kind of ties into several of these rat-a-tat-tats. It ties into this food story that we're covering now over a series of weeks. And it certainly ties into what I think is being done to the black constituency that the Democratic Marxists no longer feel is loyal. I saw it with my own eyes right here in Las Vegas. I also want to apologize to all my podcast listeners for last week. There's a hosting service for podcasts. And we use different hosting services, and one of them, I will leave them nameless, I don't think it was intentional, kind of screwed up the upload of the podcast, so that at minute 59 and a half, or whatever it was, basically it just went dark. It went silent. And then it didn't pick up for like 16 minutes after that. That's all fixed right now. For those of you who have not listened to last week's podcast but want to catch up, no problems. It should be hunky-dory. If not, you let us know right away. But I do want to apologize to all those many, 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 many hundreds of thousands of folks that went there and, like, it wasn't mid-sentence, it was the end of a sentence, thank goodness. But it was a screwed-up technical podcast glitch about an hour into last week's show, which has since been fixed. Also, I want to tell you, a lot of folks have been writing wanting to know where they can get more information on the Threads West, an American Saga series books. My suggestion to you is go to the website, www.threadswestseries.com. That's threadswestseries.com. Sign up for the newsletters. I mean, trust me, there's not more than six a year. And when they come out, they're kind of fun. There's lots of great pictures. There's kind of an update on what's going on the ranch. There's update on the books. There's usually some thoughts about the bigger political picture in the United States. You know, these books are American books, and they are American history books, and this all ties into what we see going on now. And I think that you'll enjoy them, as few as they may be. So www.threadswestseries.com. And I keep being reminded of this by the producers. You can reach me at ontherightsideradio@reagan.com. That's the email, ontherightsideradio@reagan.com. You can also, although it won't be responded to immediately, because I don't check Messenger that often, but you can leave a comment on the Facebook page, or you can send me a message via Messenger, which will eventually be read and responded to. And that is www.facebook.com/ontherightsideradio. www.facebook.com/ontherightsideradio. That page, by the way, is kind of fun. We have lots of political stuff that we post that other media just won't touch. We have recommended folks for donations, political, legal forces, all sorts of things that you can get involved with, usually 5 to 9x to 10x matches where your dollar really counts for something. You can have an impact even if you throw in 25 bucks or 20 bucks or 10 bucks or 50 bucks. You know, when you start multiplying your contribution by 10x, that's a meaningful impact to a candidate or a cause, or let's say Judicial Watch or some other of the legal folks that are standing up for people who are caught in the crosshairs of government policies right now. So I have now done my duty, as scolded to me, as the 50 lashes I received for not doing it so many weeks from the producers. You know how to reach me. Don't be bashful. Please do. Let's get into the show. Let's talk about food. Food is a weapon. So we went over the history of food as a weapon. I gave you numerous kind of fascinating examples, literally from ancient times through the Civil War up to modern times. I was asked by one listener, well, is there any situations going on right now where food is being used as a weapon? Well, putting aside that food is being used as a weapon, as we're about to discuss, against the entire population of the planet, if you take a look at what's happening with Saudi Arabia and Yemen, you know, in Yemen, you have the Houthis, which are Iranian proxies, and Yemen was destabilized by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I mean, we can really go down the rabbit hole on this, quite intentionally, I might add, for various nefarious political and ideological purposes. Certainly nothing to do with national security of the United States or geopolitical benefit to the United States. And Saudi Arabia has been hammering the Houthis, and they are using food as a weapon against Yemen. Right now, more than 85% of the Yemenis people are close to starvation because of Saudi's blockade of the coast and their flyover, like constant flyover by Saudi Air Force units to make sure supplies are not dropped in there. So yes, that is a ongoing modern use of food as a weapon of war. Saudi Arabia versus the Houthis in Yemen. I also got I got a couple of letters from folks who wanted to know why I feel that food is about to be used as a weapon against the population of the United States. We're going to go into that tonight. You know, in a funny way, what happened in Britain over the last 6 to 9 months is a great indicator, because you're starting to see the telltale signals in the United States of what went on in Britain, which of course was not covered by mainstream media in the United States at all. But I think you'll find it fascinating how the British government subjugated its citizens to contrived food shortages to breed compliance, you know, to kind of twist the lever, to torque the arm, so to speak, of the population. And you see the same thing happening now. The first thing we have to consider about food as a weapon is price. And the second thing, which kind of goes along with price, is availability. Can you get it? I mean, no matter what the price is. And food has always been subject to an unimaginable, constantly changing set of numerous variables, most of them beyond the control of man. What we're talking about today, though, is what is in the control of man, and in fact what is being controlled by man quite intentionally. The price of food, folks, and the availability of food around the world, where it's really severe, as we're going to talk about, and the United States, where we're just beginning to kind of see the tip of the iceberg, comes from 5 or 6 main factors, all of them contrived. Not like the olden days, you know, like a drought, and a drought that wasn't weather-manipulated drought, but in terms of rising energy prices, which affect production, obviously, and undermine transportation. You know, you have to produce the food, and then you have to transport the food. Fuel is a major ingredient in both those endeavors. And then there's labor shortages. And along with labor shortages, when farmers and producers, food producers, can get labor, they're having to pay more for it. And obviously they're going to pass those prices along to you. And then of course you have, and we're going to get into it here in this next segment, you have things like President Kadaver and the Democratic Marxist Build Back Better plan, which includes $1.4 trillion in tax increases. Now, I think we all know that if you tax a transportation company, if you tax a farmer or producer, if you tax a meat processing plant, or you tax any company anywhere, that tax is not going to be paid by the company or the producer or the transporter of goods and materials. It's going to be paid by you and me, because it's all going to be passed through. And then we have supply chain issues, which we have talked about off and on for the last 2 months. These are totally contrived. I mean, these are manufactured out of whole cloth. As I mentioned, it was either last week or the week before, if Kadaver and Obama wanted to solve this supply crisis, it takes like 1 2-paragraph order, which obviously they're very good at writing. And the order is that the army is going to go down and unload the ships. I mean, this is not hard. This is not difficult. Or, you know, if you don't want to get the army involved, get the National Guard involved. This is all fixable in the snap of a fingers. But, you know, it's only fixable if you want to fix it. If you don't want to fix it, then everything's going along swimmingly fine. You know, remember that the folks that we are dealing with at the upper echelons of this illegitimate government in D.C., and its globalist henchmen and cabal in governments around the globe, and the puppeteers at the upper level, the very top level of the food chain, the Gateses and the Soroses and the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts, who pull the strings of their puppets whose faces we know in public, you know, like the President of the United States and all the cabal behind him, they don't think like you and I do. This is really an important thing to remember and to keep in mind as we go through this segment on food as a weapon against the world's population right now. Everything in your mind that says black is black and white is white and red is red and yellow is yellow or green is green is exactly the opposite in their mind. They don't want to fix these problems. Do not for a moment assume that they do. They created these problems. They did so intentionally. They could fix these problems. They are not doing so intentionally. The question then becomes why? Not if it's happening, not when it happens. It's happening, but why is it happening? Keep those questions in mind as we go through this segment. And of course, the other questions to keep in mind as we go through this show, and I'm going to remind you of them at the end of the show, is will you muster and will you stand? Will you say no? Will you say, I will not comply? Think about that. So, moving along, we have environmental concerns which affect food production and food prices. Now, since the installation through election fraud of Qadhafi and Obama in Obama's third term, we have the rapid growth of environmental agencies, bureaucracies, and the emboldening of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, you know, nonprofits, the environmental terrorists out there. And they have run amok over the last 6 to 12 months of the Qadhafi presidency. And they know that they can run amok because nothing's going to happen to them. There is no accountability. We've had vast swaths of American farmland, some of its most fertile farmland in California, shut down because it can't get water, because the water's being diverted for the snail darter, you know, and other similar quote-unquote contrived environmental considerations. If you remember the timber shortage 20, 30 years ago that was caused by the so-called white spotted owl, yes, there's a white spotted owl, but the white spotted owl, folks, was used as a lever by the environmental groups to stop logging. If you think they cared a hoot, no pun intended, about the white spotted owl, you are flat crazy. They only cared about stopping the harvest of trees. One of the reasons, by the way, that California and Oregon and Washington seem to be burning every summer. But, you know, small price to pay. Small price to pay. And then, of course, they use the burns created, at least in part, by the environmental policies and terror that they wrought on lumber and timber companies and lumberjacks and transportation companies through the courts and otherwise, in fact, direct acts of terror, you know, blowing up loggers, spiking trees, causing injuries and death. They use that and the fires that those policies created to further push environmental terrorism. Well, you know, this is a fire-prone area, so you can't build houses here, or you can't rebuild the house that burned in the last fire we caused. These are very clever, very insidious people, and they are funded to the hilt by Communist China, by Soros, by Gates, and by a host of other globalist or self-interested parties who really, really don't give a damn whatsoever about the environmental sanctity of the United States. And they certainly don't give a damn about you and me. In fact, quite the contrary. If they could possibly erase you and I without a fight overnight, they would do it. Do not kid yourself for one moment about this. These people have killed millions over the last 10 years. In the Mideast and around the globe, and right here in the United States of America, through COVID, through other policies, they care not what genocide they cause, so long as their ultimate aim is achieved. And their ultimate aim, in the case of the very elite, is control, power, and money. And in the echelon under them, the people whose puppet strings they pull, the Qadhafis and the Obamas, etc., the concerns are the same. They are not about this country, and they are not about you and I. I keep telling you, step out of your box, expand your thinking, do not take what you think is going on for granted. Think big picture. Connect the dots. You hear the dots. It's not just from this show, but from here, there, and everywhere. Connect those dots. They will form a picture for you, and you can pretty much rely on the picture that they form. So, we have these environmental causes, quite intentional, of food shortages, the lessening of food production, the lessening of food transportation. And then we have kind of overt government intervention, who they cloak their intervention in all sorts of things, you know, COVID and health, welfare, and safety of the general population, and, you know, clean air and clean water and yada, yada, yada. You've heard the litany. But in effect, they have a purpose. with these interventions. They have a purpose when they pay tens of thousands of farmers around the United States to plow in their crops. I'm not making this up. That's been going on the last year or so. They have a purpose when they create policies, blaming it on COVID or blaming it on environment or blaming it on the Green New Deal. You know, everything is cloaked, right? The real intent is never shown. Everything else is the warm fuzzy that covers it, that you see from the mainstream media who, I won't go there. I'll probably get in trouble for saying what I really think of the mainstream media. You know, rising energy prices affect not only all these other aspects of food, its production, its transportation, its getting on the shelf, going to your house and getting prepared. You know, it takes energy to prepare food to eat, but it also affects fertilizer. And you're probably looking at the radio right now in your truck or your house, or you're looking at your computer or your phone if you're listening to the podcast, you're not on AM radio, and you're going, what is he talking about? Look, one of the largest expenses in agriculture is fertilizer. And when you increase the raw materials that are needed, that go into fertilizer or are needed to make fertilizer, you greatly increase the price and the availability of food. The less fertilizer you have, the less food you grow. The more fertilizer costs, the more food will eventually cost you, the consumer, on the supermarket shelf. It's very simple, supply and demand. And you know, the democratic Marxists and the globalists of the world, as much as they want to downtrod, downplay, and castigate capitalism, they're very aware how it works. And boy, are they good at manipulating it to their benefit and your detriment. So let me tell you about fertilizer. And then we're going to get into this English part of this, which I think you're going to find fascinating because you will tie it right into what's going on in the United States right now and how they use COVID in England, just as they are using it now in the United States. England's about 3 months ahead of us, to shut down shipping and shut down transportation and shut down food production, quite intentionally, I might add. So this fourth horseman of the apocalypse, so to speak, fertilizer, DTN is a world leader in agricultural intelligence and analytics. They do some great reports. They identified, just in the last few months, 8 major fertilizers in the global market. And according to DTN, 5 of those 8 major fertilizers on the market and used throughout the world have more than doubled, that's up 100%, in price just during the course of 2021. And the 8 fertilizers that they say are kind of the crux, the focus, the fulcrum of modern global agricultural production is DAP, which is diaminium phosphates. It's up 71% for the year. MAP, I'm not even going to pronounce this. This is another form of phosphate, up 68% of the year. Potash, up 105% for the year. Urea, up 123% for the year. 10340, up 51%. Anhydrous ammonia, up 138%. UAN28, 161% increase over the course of this year. UAN32, 142% increase. Look, these fertilizers are not just used to grow crops that humans eat, but they're used to grow feed that livestock eat. Cows and sheep and pigs, and in some cases chickens. These fertilizers are all key to the global food chain, particularly as the population of the earth has, shall we say, multiplied. And of course, what are the aims of the globalists? Oh, yeah, population reduction. They've said it themselves. I've had the videos on this show. You know, when Bill Gates looks into the camera and says, well, I think about 2.5 billion people is the right population for the planet, and you know that the current population of the planet is increasing to 8 billion, that kind of leaves a question in your mind. Well, gee, Bill, if we're at 8 million and you think 2.5 million is good, how are we going to get there? Oh, wow. There's a lot of answers to that question. We've been exploring them over the last 4, 5, 6 months. Have we not? Food is now one of them. Food is now one of them. DTN's most recent data, the price of DAP is now $821 a ton. MAP, fertilizer is $906 a ton. These are the highest prices since 2008, the Great Recession. Anhydrous ammonia, key fertilizer in a lot of ways for a lot of crops and a lot of feed production for livestock, is now at $1,162 per ton. And UAN, another critical fertilizer, is at $614 per ton. At those prices, folks, they are at the all-time price top highs, all-time. And they're going higher, which means higher costs for farmers and producers. And that means higher costs for you and for me, which is as it is designed to be. So fertilizer in relation to food prices, let me put this in context for you. And obviously, I'm a rancher, so I'm kind of familiar with this, although we try and use as little fertilizer as possible for what we do. According to the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, their Economic Research Service, fertilizer accounts for between 14 and 36% at these prices of a farmer's total cost of operation for the key eight food staples in 2021. Think about that, 14 to 36%. Let me give you some example. On the lower end, let's take peanuts or soybeans or rice or those kind of crops. 14 to 19% of total farming costs go just into fertilizer. And then, of course, with higher energy costs, think about tractors and trucks and transportation. I can go on and on, on and on and on. On the higher end, getting into really critical food sources, the fertilizer costs for like corn and wheat and oats, that's 36%, 35%, and 32% respectively of 2021 farming and production costs. Think about that. With the increases in prices of fertilizer, a third of a farmer's expenses are in fertilizer. You would have never thought that, would you? And then add to that the fuel costs. And now you can start to see what's happening with food prices, which are rocketing upwards. And although I hate to say it, with no end in sight, quite the contrary. Let me tell you that current fertilizer prices, the prices I just shared with you, are not, let me underline this, not yet reflected in current food prices. Fertilizers are kind of a lagging indicator of the increase in the cost of food. And these record high prices, I mean record high prices, we're going to see those reflected 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now, maybe a little bit sooner, maybe a little bit later. But the food that you are buying right now, that food is 3, 4, 5, 6, in some cases 8 months old. You know how? Oh, well, let me tell you, most of the fruits and vegetables that are found in the quote unquote fresh food section of your supermarket are actually weeks or months old. Yeah, let's take one, for instance, fresh apples. Now, you know, apples, they only ripen for a really short season in the fall, right? So how do you get, like, fresh apples? You know, it's May or June, and here's all these bright, shiny, fresh red apples on the supermarket shelves. Well, apples, just like many other foodstuffs, they're harvested right before they naturally ripen, and they're treated with a chemical, and it's called 1-MCP, methylcyclopropene, and it delays the ripening process of these foods. And then they're kept after they've been treated in cold storage. In some cases, like carrots and things like that, it's for up to 9 to 14 months before they get to the shelves. So you can see that the fertilizer prices of today are not reflected on the shelves yet, but they will be. They will be. MCP, by the way, is also used. It's kind of like the Tabasco sauce of the fruit and vegetable industry. You know, tomatoes, bananas, pears, peaches, plums, apricots, kiwis, nectarine. I can go. The list is endless. Half the fruits that you see on the grocery store that look so healthy and look like they just came off the vine are actually months old, and they've all been treated with MCP. So there's an outfit called Mashed.com. Talks about potatoes. Potatoes can be stored with MCP treatment for 11 months. Carrots, 9 months after being harvested. So think about what's going to happen when the food that gets to these shelves, and that's going to be delayed too with transportation and supply chain, all of which are contrived, when the food that gets to these shelves start reflecting the fertilizer prices that I just gave you, which we are facing today. It's going to be ugly. And if you think it's going to be ugly here in the United States, you think about how ugly it's going to be in the less developed portions of the planet, which, by the way, is 85% of the planet. You know, people who are starving, people who can't feed their families because there is no food or the meager food that's available is priced out of their reach, they tend to get just a little angry. And there tends to be a lot of civil unrest, there tends to be a lot of violence, and there tends to be wars. The democratic Marxists and the globalists and the international forces which want to see the United States taken down a la China primarily, and then Russia and Iran, they love chaos. Chaos is their friend. If you don't think so, you think about the summer, last summer, and the current riots, which, by the way, are not being reported by mainstream media once again. You think about that unrest, the chaos that it created, and the destabilizing effect it had on American society and American governments. Multiply that globally, and you begin to see what kind of social problems you may have. Desperate people do desperate things. Just that simple. So if we talk about fertilizer and we talk about environment and we talk about all these other factors that go into food availability, food transportation, and food costs and production costs, you can see that the problems that we have seen thus far, which have been at least on a relative global scale minor in the United States, you can see how they're going to be exacerbated. And you can start to get a feel for what's happening in other parts of the world, which is being kept from you by a treasonous mainstream media. In short, all of these things, the coming higher taxes, the torquing down of environmental regulations, the increase and continuing increase in fuel costs, the skyrocketing costs of fertilizer, these are all going to catch up with us. Okay, these are all lagging factors in food prices. They're not reflected in current food prices. They will be reflected in future prices of the stuff that you put in your mouth and chew for dinner. You know, global food insecurity, once again, to put this in context, it was a major issue prior to the COVID stuff, but it was improving over the last 15 years, and this is according to the United Nations. You know, take it for what you want. Their Food and Agricultural Organization, the number of undernourished people in the world fell 20% from about 810 million folks, which, remember, is close to a seventh of the world's population, in 2005 to 650 million in 2019. And undernourished people declined from 12.4% of the Earth's population to about 8.4%. You know, this every percent is tens upon tens of millions of people. I mean, think globally. Think of 7.5 billion global population. And then, of course, COVID came. Oh, and it's been unwound and unraveled so quickly by the elitist globalist powers that be that all the progress that the planet made over the last 15 years has disappeared in the last 12 months. All of it. It's all gone. And getting worse. By the minute, by the day, and around the globe. So global food prices, let's take the United States and other wealthy, quote-unquote, Western nations. This crisis that is upon most of the world and which is coming to us is going to be really painful. But where it's going to be painful for us, the Western economies, it's going to mean downright collapse, as it's intended to mean, for less developed nations. If I give you a relative, I think it'll help you. In the United States, even at these high prices, we're still spending about 10%, give or take, and depending upon your diet, of our income on food. If the price of food doubled here in the United States, we'd be spending about 20%. You know, very painful, particularly for folks at the lower end of the economic spectrum, but doable. The price of food could probably triple in the Western economies. I mean, it would be very, very unpleasant, and the less income you have, the more unpleasant it would be. But think about what's happening in, let's say, Nigeria and Cameroon and Myanmar and Bangladesh, you know, countries like that. Right now, The average person in those countries is spending 50 to 60%. That's 50 to 60% of their income on food. That's the average person. There's an outfit by the name of SB Morgan Intelligence who kind of studies this kind of stuff. They looked at Nigeria. Nigerians who earn less than the government-mandated minimum wage spend 95%. Let me repeat that. 95% at current prices of their income on food consumption. So what happens, folks, if food prices double in those countries? Well, I think we know what happens, right? Civil unrest, rioting, destruction, death, war. Let's take Afghanistan. I brought that up before. You know, I brought up the Middle East before, Saudi Arabia and Yemen. So in Afghanistan, which is kind of fresh in our minds, the horror of it, and I'm going to have something in the rat-a-tat-tat, the intentional mess that was created there by Qaddafi and Obama and minions. Well, the Afghan regime, which is now the Taliban, does not have the funds to get food and other essentials. They just don't have the money. They have lots of military equipment, which we left for them, but they don't have the cash. And there's been an unprecedented surge in food prices, and the Afghan people are desperate. I mean, think about that example I just gave you in Nigeria. That's happening in Afghanistan right now. The Hindustan Times, which is a paper over in that neck of the woods, recently reported that scores of hungry Afghans are selling their own children to survive, unquote. Think about that. There's a think tank out of Canada. It's called IFFRAS. And 95%, according to them, 95% of Afghans do not have enough food to eat. Half the population is expected to face acute hunger levels. That's basically one step before starvation, death by starvation. And the winter in Afghanistan is setting in right now as you're listening to this show. I mean, the tough winter, right? The dark, cold winter that Joe Biden has warned us of. Right now, and this is according to the International Monetary Fund, there's 152 developing nations that are home to 6.6 billion people. We're talking about 85 to 90% of the world's total population are in these 152 countries. 85%, give or take. This is not a political crisis that can be solved through diplomacy. This is not a financial crisis that can be mitigated by, you know, the Fed printing more money or the central banks printing more money. It's not a military crisis where, you know, you can send your army out and beat the competitor, beat the enemy. And it's not a health crisis that can be relieved with medical technology, particularly if Fauci is running it. But it is a basic problem. What are the three things that humans need? Not want, but need. Food, water, shelter. And of course, in a subcontext to shelter is heat and fuel. That's what humans need to survive. Not want, but need to survive. When you start dismantling those pillars of human survival, bad things happen. Chaos ensues. And the elites, the globalists, the puppeteers, and their puppets want exactly that to happen. I'll explain more here in just a minute. I'm going to explain it is not really taking American examples. You know what's going on as much as has been shared and told you. What's going on here in the United States? But here's what you don't know. You don't know how the United Kingdom, Britain, our ally, is about 3 months ahead of us on this swing of the pendulum. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's happened there over the last year. You will see the stark similarities to what is beginning to happen, or maybe past the beginning, but not yet fully engaged here in the United States. You think they're doing tests on various Western civilizations to see how they can get this, that, or the other done? Well, you know, there are no coincidences, folks. None. So in February of 2021, and prior to that for a month or two, Britain embarked on this massive testing of their entire population, or as much of their population as they could stick a nasal swab up their nose. and they use the PCR tests. We've talked about them ad infinitum. Their Nobel Laureate Prize-winning developer said, you cannot use this to detect COVID. We know as a fact, irrefutable fact now, that the PCR tests were ramped up to many levels of what was needed to detect quote-unquote COVID, so much so that they read up to 80% false positives, which of course the mainstream media gleefully reported as, you know, massive rises in COVID infections, when in fact it was not. Well, Britain kind of employed the same stuff, shall we say. And there was actually a thing called pinging. Believe it or not, the National Health Service in Britain, right, socialized medicine, which that's a whole nother thing we're going to get into here one of these weeks. It's socialized medicine. And if you had to go down and get a test to continue to work. And when you got your test, besides your DNA probably going to China, which was harvesting it, all your information was taken down and your cell phone number. And if your test was positive, they would ping your cell phone in Britain. And if you got pinged, you had to go quarantine for 10 days or 14 days or whatever the current rules that the powers that be had promulgated at that time. Well, the pandemic, as it began, or the pingdemic, as it began to be called over there, because they used the PCR tests, and because, although I do not have evidence of this, I guarantee you, just as in the United States, they ramped up the transects they ran on the swabs to get lots of false positives, as many positives as they could get. You know, fear is their ally. And it served a cause, because hundreds of thousands of the people that were pinged happened to be what they call lorry drivers over there. In American parlance, truck drivers, semi-drivers. They're called lorries over in the UK. It got so bad. Let me give you one example. In February of 2021, the Metro, a paper over in Britain, reported that a delivery driver was sacked. He was fired for refusing to wear a face mask inside his own truck with nobody else present. And the reason was the company wanted him to wear a mask, quote, in case he passed coronavirus out his window, unquote. That's how crazy it got over there in England. In June of this year, iNews, also from the UK, began to report that there were food shortages and that fresh produce was being left to rot and the prices were rising because of the lorry driver crisis, which of course was created by the test crisis and the pingdemic, you know, all engineered by the government, who then blamed it. Gee, does this sound kind of familiar? You got to have something to blame. Who then blamed it on Brexit. You know, the globalists were not happy with Brexit. So let's blame it on the stuff that you voted for so that you understand this is all your fault, people. And they blamed it, of course, on COVID. COVID and Brexit. They were the scapegoats of what was going on with the pingdemic and shortfalls of 65 to 100,000 lorry drivers at any given time. There's another paper over there. It's kind of left-leaning, in fact, The Guardian. In fact, they got some money from Bill Gates. I gave you that story, I believe, last week. The Guardian reported that Britain was facing a summer of food shortages, which, in fact, they were. And they blamed on the lack of lorry drivers, which they blamed on Brexit and COVID, of course. There's a guy by the name of Shane Brennan over there. He's the CEO of the Cold Chain Foundation. This is one of the big trucking shipping outfits over in Britain. Quote, I think it is going to be like a series of rolling power cuts in that we are going to see shortages, then shelves replenished, and then shortages again. That is going to carry on for as long as demand is unpredictable and labor remains as tight as it is, unquote. And why is labor tight, folks? Oh, that's right, the COVID restrictions. My, how this all does tie in. Just as I reported to you about, a month and a half ago, how all the big mucky mucks in the transportation and shipping industries in the United States wrote a letter warning of the collapse of the American supply chain. Well, guess what? All the industry chieftains in those same service sectors, they wrote to Boris Johnson back there in the early summer of 2021. I quote, we firmly believe that intervention from the Prime Minister or the Cabinet Office is the only way we will be able to avert critical supply chains failing at an unprecedented and unimaginable level. Supermarkets are already reporting that they are not receiving their expected food stocks, And as a result, there is considerable wastage. In other words, food that can't get the market, folks, has to be destroyed and gets wasted, so there's less food. Gee, it's funny how all this stuff ties in. There's another paper over there, The Express. The Express reported that supermarkets were missing deliveries, not receiving all their stock, a lack of laborers, a lack of lorry drivers. Another outfit over there in Britain, Breaking News, they said Britain could face an, quote, unimaginable collapse of supply chains, end quote. And, of course, they blamed it on, oh, that's right, the pandemic and Brexit. All you nasty British people who voted for Brexit, who voted against the New World Order. Shame on you. Now you're going to starve. It's all your own fault that you're starving, folks. It's all your own fault. There were some videos over there, and in fact, they're going to be posted on the website under Family Safety that you really should watch. One of them is a video that got a lot of play on social media in the UK, but it was a farmer, and basically he was explaining that the empty shelves everybody was seeing, those empty shelves were being deliberately engineered. Brownouts of food, he called it. The UK farmer that I'm talking about, that you'll see in the video. Okay, so these empty shelves are being deliberately engineered, and Reuters reported that Premier Foods, this is right about the same time that this video came out, which is one of Britain's largest food companies, called on the government to consider using the army to distribute goods to help relieve a severe shortage of lorry drivers. Gee, but they didn't, just like here in the United States. Must be a coincidence. And then Britain's pingdemic, as I'll call it, though it was being widely reported about that time, let me put this in perspective for you. Within the space of about 10 days, 1 million British citizens were pinged in the pingdemic, and a large portion of them had to do with supply chain positions. Wow. You know, that COVID must spread from those lorry windows, right? They had it all right. All the coronavirus comes out of the lorry windows and circulates down the highway at 90 kilometers per hour or whatever they're driving. You bet. The Sun, another British paper, they reported that another million people were pinged in the month after May. Again, knocking whole bunches of people out of the workforce. Because under British rules, if you're pinged, you can't go to work. You have to do your quarantine for 14 days, and then you're retesting, and then et cetera, et cetera. Basically, the month is shot. You are not driving your truck to the supermarket to stock the shell. Amazing. Right. The Sun, by the way, also reported that shelves, empty shelves, in supermarkets, it began to warn the public to not panic buy amidst the pandemic, the pingdemic. And of course, the more they warned the public to not panic, the more the public panicked. Who would have thought? Who could have possibly foreseen that? So, at one point in time this summer, 15 to 20% of Britain's entire workforce and 30 to 40% of their transportation workforce and their production workforce in terms of food was not working. Zero. There's an outfit over there by the name of Tesco. They had 3,500 lorry drivers before all this nonsense started. At any given time over a two-month period, 500 of those 3,500 were self-isolating or in quarantine. Okay, self-isolating is the term they use over there. There's the president and the founder of Two Sisters Food in England, one of the largest food groups in England. They said, quote, the UK would see the worst food shortages in 75 years caused by bigger issues than the pingdemic unless the government acts swiftly. Since May of this year, the operating environment has deteriorated so profoundly, I can see no other outcome than major food shortages in the UK, unquote. This is one of Britain's largest food outfits. The Daily Mail, another outfit over there. And you know, this is the way you have to research this stuff. There's no way, you're not going to hear this on American media. You can't even, Google does its best to eliminate this stuff. I mean, it's a struggle to find this. You can only find it through DuckDuckDuckGo and some of the other, shall we say, non-Google tainted search engines. So the Daily Mail, this is in August, folks. This is 60, give or take, 75 days ago. It's just like right behind us. They reported that the army was finally on standby to stock the shelves in Britain, but the army was never ordered in. And they reported that there were thousands of new prospective lorry drivers being trained. Where did all that come from? I wonder if did it have anything to do with immigration? I'll have to check on that. Over there in Britain, the Road Haulage Association, They were beating the drums. They were warning people that bringing in the army would not be enough to prevent, I quote, a very serious threat to the supply chain, unquote. Supermarkets began to try and hire their own lorries. They were giving people 5,000 pounds sterling bonuses to drive a truck. That should give you an idea. In late August, the Daily Mail reported that there was a co-op boss, you know, a cooperative, where people kind of pool their produce, who said that the food shortages that he was seeing at the co-op were, quote, the worst he has ever seen, unquote, and that the co-op had had to reduce basically its entire range, what it stored, what it could offer in stores, where it could ship, the whole nine yards. And of course, you know, it had to do with Brexit and it had to do with COVID. Boy, they sure got that line down, don't they? They certainly do. In September, folks, this is under 60 days ago, the BBC, you know, kind of the state radio of the left-leaning British government, they said that food manufacturing in the United Kingdom was under such a strain because of staff shortages and COVID and Brexit that some production might have to be moved out of the country. That'll give you an idea of what's going on over in Britain. It's pretty amazing. Look, food as a weapon of war is used to get people to toe the line, folks. Whether it was in a siege 5,000 years ago by the Spartans, or whether it is in Yemen right now as perpetrated by the Saudis, or whether it is exactly as I am speaking to you here in the Western world and the rest of the world in terms of achieving another purpose. All of which has to do with, however, it has to do with complying and towing the line, you know, being good little collective citizens. It's gotten so bad in England, by the way, that literally 60 days ago, they killed 100,000 pigs because, oh yes, it was Brexit's fault, you know. There was a shortage of butchers because of Brexit. You should have never voted for Brexit because you lost your butchers. And this is all food. And the government paid these farmers to get rid of these pigs because they couldn't get them to market. You really kind of have to think about this for a moment. But it's easy to see that food shortages are by design. They are not so much by consequence. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Mike Yaden over there. Here's his theory. I'm going to read it to you. Quote, I expect deliberate food shortages at some point because that gives the excuse for rationing. Then you can't have a third-party food shop for you because I predict a ration will be linked to a valid vaccination pass. Not all at once, just restrictions at the margin initially to get us used to it and the way it will be, unquote. Let me give you some other headlines from the last 3 to 5 months. From around the world. Ireland, a video. Irish farmer ordered to kill all cows and not purchase any replacement cows. The Netherlands, total insanity. Dutch cabinet plans to take farms from farmers to combat global warming. These are actual headlines, folks. Australia, the United Nations is demonizing our farmers and trying to send our society back to the Stone Age by taking 2.4 billion kilos of protein off the island. That was by Malcolm Roberts, by the way, who's a senator in Queensland. Malaysia, vegetables go to waste as farmers wilt under lockdown. India, Indian regime seizes Sikh farmland and destroys crops. Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka raids sugar stocks as food shortages bite. America, right here in the United States, farmers paid to destroy crops. America, right here in the United States. Most Americans have no idea how close they are to poverty and starvation and death. America, right here in the United States. School cafeterias suffering food shortages. China, flooding impacts food supply. Brazil, freezes impact food supply. United States, drought impacts food supply. And the United States, top exporters lose crops as grains crisis accelerates. Next week, we're going to go over some things to be alert for, to watch for in American news. Remember that the news that you are being given has a purpose. It's fear. It's control. And I'm going to tell you next week, I had hoped to get into it this week, but we just don't have the time, what you can do to protect yourself and your family. And it doesn't mean going out and being un-American to your fellow Americans and hoarding stuff, but there are many steps you can take to kind of get ahead of the power curve here, both price-wise and supply-wise on food. Now we're going to talk about this Build Back Better budget busting. You know, the Democratic Marxists, you know, if they move their lips, they're lying. The supposed $1.9 trillion second quote-unquote infrastructure bill, or as the squad likes to call it, the human infrastructure bill. First of all, this bill will cost us $4.79 trillion, folks. That's $5 trillion, not $1.9 trillion. There's 150 new programs and agencies in this bill. It is the largest expansion of government in the history of the United States. Let me give you one example. They're going to form a new kind of Green New Deal energy department, which will be staffed by 300,000 additional bureaucrats, all of whom, by the way, oh, and 87,000 new IRS agents, all of whom get a salary, and all of whom get lavish government benefits, and who work in government offices, and who drive government cars, and who get fuel purchased by the government, and on ad infinitum. And you know who pays for this? That's right, you and me pay for this. And then buried in the bill, which the press doesn't like to talk about at all, is amnesty for like 7 million or more illegal aliens, you know, green cards, and a path to citizenship, you know, voting, folks. And there's lots of things in the bill that incentivize less work, not more work. I mean, supposedly we have a labor shortage. How about $1.4 trillion in new taxes? And don't let them give you this nonsense. It's only going to affect people $400,000 or more. It affects everybody. Number one, at the top of the food chain, no pun intended, those people are going to pass on the additional taxes to you, the consumer. Secondly, all these taxes add up to more fuel costs for you and more food costs for you. Even if you don't pay any tax, which, by the way, you will pay in a host of other ways, far more than a tax, so to speak. It's a stealth tax, the worst kind. It's a tax that you're paying that's hidden from you, on purpose, I might add. We're going to go into great detail on this bill as it starts to shape up in the Senate. Hopefully, it'll be killed. And the surest way to kill this bill is to write your senators. I don't even care if you're in a blue state. Write your senators anyway. And your congresspeople. Get proactive. Stand up. Muster. And tell them to not vote for an increase in the debt ceiling. I brought you that segment, I believe it was last week. We have plenty of money to service the debt of the United States. 10 to 1. Our receipts are 10 times more than our interest payments, which is servicing the debt. Do not fall for this nonsense that they have fed you for decades, that, you know, the full faith and credit of the United States Treasury and, you know, the dollar will collapse and the world will end and blah, 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 blah. Nonsense. There's plenty of money to pay the interest on the debt. 10 to 1 debt coverage. 10 to 1. That is infinitely more than you need to qualify for a house mortgage, to put it in personal perspective. The debt ceiling does not need to be raised, and it should not be raised. And you know what? If you don't raise the debt ceiling, you've pretty much de facto killed this bill, because this bill is a budget buster. If you don't have a debt ceiling, you can't go further into debt. Do you think that this $1.9 trillion, never mind the $1.1 trillion that already got approved with 13 rhinos, we talked about that over the last few weeks too. Do you think that this is not going to be money that's printed by the Treasury that increases the national debt? If there's a debt ceiling, they can't do it. Do not increase the debt ceiling. Write your congressmen, write your senators. I want to talk briefly about black people. Black people as a voting bloc for the Democratic Marxists. Never mind the fact that it was Democrats who were the slavers and the slavery proponents back when. Nothing much has changed. Okay, the word slavery has now been replaced by the word voter. You know? And whips and chains have now been replaced by monetary tethers. If you vote for me, you'll get X, paid for by all these other guys over there. But black people are beginning to wake up to this. We saw it in the 2020 election, even though the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. A significant percentage of black folks voted Republican. And most black folks have conservative-leaning tendencies. And they're beginning to see through the nonsense that's being thrown their way on a daily basis, through the victimhood which is being foisted upon them, to keep them alienated from the rest of society in America by Democrats who want only their vote. Just look at the Democratic cities with large black populations around the United States. Nothing has changed for 50 years. There's a bunch of platitudes and some money thrown at everybody when it's election time, and then fend for yourself. How about Chicago, where, 4,000 people get shot every month, right? Do you think these people care? The Democratic Marxists care about black people? No, they don't. In fact, right now they're upset at black people. They're upset at black people because black people are no longer the 98 or 99% monolith voting machine that they've been used to for the last 50 years. Now it's down around 82% or 75%, or in some places in the country, 65 to 70%. The Democrats cannot win elections without a monolithic vote of certain victim classes that, of course, they have created, that they have not only created, but they have convinced are victim classes. And that ties in to the southern border. You know, if your voters leave you, you have to get new voters. Gee, and here we are with 2 million new voters flooding the southern border. And who do these people affect? You know, this is the punishment part of this for not being loyal. It affects black folks. The jobs that many black people work very hard at are jobs that illegal immigrants want to have for less money. This is a recipe for disaster for the black folks of the United States, and they're beginning to wake up for it. Who do you think gets hurt more when gas goes up $1 a gallon or $1.50 a gallon as it has over the last year? Do you think the guy who makes $200,000 a year and commutes out to the suburbs? Or do you think it's the black family in an inner city who has to drive 10 miles, let's say, to get food at the local store or get their, everyday goods hither, yither, and yon? You know the answer to that. And you know what? More and more black people are beginning to know the answer to that, too. Let me tell you a little side story here. So I'm down in Las Vegas, and we had to get some supplies. And I didn't want to drive, traffic and all that kind of stuff. I'm not a big city guy. I didn't want to drive the 5 miles to whatever store it was. So we went down to what's called a neighborhood Walmart. I've never been in one before. It's a much, much smaller Walmart than your superstores that many people are used to. But it was the nearest store. We went down there. About 85 to 90% of the people in that store, very friendly, by the way, were black. And we bought the couple little things we needed, and I was fascinated. I actually walked around the store and walked all the aisles looking at prices. Let me tell you that the prices in that neighborhood Walmart, which was about the size of a smaller grocery store, were double prices that I had seen anywhere else, and were double the prices at Walmart supercenters. So here's Walmart, a woke corporation who tells their employees about diversity and scolds their white employees about privilege. Here they are ripping off a black community with prices double what they are at their other stores, just because of proximity and location. That, to me, was stereotypical. It was a prime example of what is really going on right now between the woke Marxists and what they have regarded in the past as their monolithic voting bloc. It was fascinating, fascinating. We're going to talk more about this in the future. Let's get into rat-a-tat-tat, shall we? You know, when I do rat-a-tat-tat for you folks every week, honestly, there are hundreds of things that I could bring to your attention. There's just not enough time to do it. Even if I just did headlines, there wouldn't be enough time to do it. So I try and pick those pieces of information, those nuggets, which mean the most in the context of the show I have planned for you, the historical story I have for you, and in the message I'm trying to bring you for that particular show or series of shows. So let's go to Afghanistan again. So this is like a week ago Monday. The State Department says that there's no way they're going to bring back the families of 60 United States military service members from Afghanistan. I quote, "They were all evaluated, and thus far in the evaluation, none have been determined to be eligible for parolee status." This is a guy by the name of Kirby. He's a spokesman. Yeah, that's the government's term, by the way, for Afghans who qualify for evacuation because they're direct relatives of U.S. citizens or residents, folks. The Pentagon, oh yes, General Milley. The Pentagon they refuse to say how many family members the State Department reviews every month and how many family members were affected. And all those numbers, as we know, the amount of Americans left, the amount of Afghan allies left, the amount of Afghan family members of U.S. servicemen left, they've been a shifting target, right? Shifting target since August 30th, that botched U.S. military withdrawal. So that you know, many of the troops who have tried to get relatives evacuated were Afghan interpreters, people who put their lives on the line for America and weren't even Americans, who then immigrated to the United States and enlisted in the Army. They can't get their families out of there, folks. The State Department, you know, Blinken, oh my God, the State Department is in charge of determining whether Afghans qualify for parole and evacuation. Oh, really? They must be the spouse or a child under 21 years of age of a United States citizen or resident. That is the criteria. But for some reason, these people aren't getting evacuated. Think about what this does. Never mind, we know Qaddafi and Obama's mentality on this. But think about the other good things in their minds they accomplish. This almost ensures, particularly after Vietnam, where much the same happened, this almost ensures that in future conflicts, the United States is going to get zero help from the local population because the United States can't be trusted. I mean, the long-term effects of what's going on in Afghanistan will not be felt until there is another major conflagration somewhere. And we need eyes and boots and ears on the ground that we don't have because we're non-native to whatever land we happen to be in. And then Afghanistan is destabilizing as we speak. I told you about the food stuff. Well, ISIS-K, you know, kind of the new ISIS, they're gaining more and more power. And the Taliban, they're locked in bitter struggles with ISIS. I mean, they're deploying hundreds and thousands more fighters to the eastern provinces to try and counteract the growth of ISIS-K. In fact, just in the last month, they've sent 1,300 Taliban fighters to the Nangarhar province. So Afghan is a boiling point, and it's a boiling point because of how we withdrew. And we withdrew that way intentionally so that it would be a boiling point. Then we have a leaked document from the Department of Homeland Security. This might explain why nothing's being done about what's going on the southern border. As it turns out, the DHS is so busy being woke that they just don't have time to attend to their job, which is the border. Not to mention that Mayorkas, the head of DHS, who I warned you about 6 months before he assumed the position, is a Chinese and Marxist sympathizer and a true blue anti-American. So there's been a report that came out in November from DHS operations, and it lists the department. You got to listen to this. It lists the department's priorities for 2022. Do you think the border's up there? Do you think radical Islam is up there? Do you think protection of the American people against terrorist threats is up there? No. The first two things on that list, the DHS department's priorities for 2022, goes to number one, compliance with federal regulations, and number two, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not making this up. There's a gal, a professor, a left-wing nut professor up in Canada. Her name was Bourassa, and she went around. You remember Elizabeth Warren? You know, she was Cherokee. She had high cheekbones, so she must have been Cherokee. And she got all these goodies and all this praise and Harvard and scholarships and all this kind of stuff, and then it was all nonsense. Well, it seems like woke women have the same affliction no matter what country they're in, because this Bourassa gal, whose real name, by the way, is Rachel Dolezal, she went through school, and she went through the Canadian government, where she was a consultant, saying she was a full-blooded member of the Métis tribe up there in Canada. She even dressed in Métis wardrobes. Oh, yeah. Well, it just so happens she got caught. She's not a member of the Métis tribe. She has no Métis blood. It was all a hoax. And she's been relieved of a bunch of consulting positions with the Canadian government. And then she tried to backtrack. You know, I just love these folks. Instead of saying, you know, you're right, I'm wrong, blah, 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 she begins to backtrack. And she says, oh, well, she's not a Métis person, but she's an adopted Métis person. You know, you can't make this stuff up. It's friggin' unbelievable. Hey, Anyway, she was a prestigious researcher and a professor, of course, at the University of Saskatchewan. And she was like a high mucky muck in the Canadian government's Institute of Indigenous People's Health. But in the end, she was just a complete fraud. Kind of like, you know, Elizabeth Warren. Oh, and then we have Cadaver's 3.5-hour virtual conference with Chinese President Xi. Yeah, what a disaster that was. And, you know, the official word from the White House is the meeting was, quote, respectful and straightforward, quote, but they didn't stick to the scripts and went back and forth and recounted stories. Gee, how's that for vague comments on the meeting of the planet's two greatest adversaries and two largest powers? There's a paper over there in China called the South China Morning Post. They seem to think that not only did all those warm fuzzies happen, but that Biden appealed, in fact begged, according to them, to Xi to release Chinese crude oil to stabilize rising oil prices and save Biden from the mounting pressure regarding the soaring price of gasoline in the United States. This is just terrific. I wonder if they talked about that before or after they talked about the bank deal and what the big guy gets. There's a Republican representative, Michael Cloud of Texas. Along with 51 other congressmen, he wrote a letter to ATF Director Marvin Richardson. Ah, what a peach. And this was just, I think, a week ago, Monday. Because a new rule has cropped up from ATF. You know, there's no law. There's been no congressional act. It's contrary to the Second Amendment. And it's contrary to existing federal statute. It's perfect Democratic Marxist rule. It's great. And the rule says that the 20-year burn date on federal background checks, that's gone. Now the rule says that firearms dealers, FFE folks, are required to keep those records indefinitely. That means if you've bought a firearm, your record could get to the ATF, which the law precludes. In fact, the last time I checked it, those records were supposed to be gone in either 7 years and certain parts of the records 7 days after the NICS check. Quote, this is a guy by the name of Cloud, by the way. The proposed rule would be a giant leap toward a federal firearms registry, which is explicitly banned by law, requiring federal firearm licensees to preserve records older than 20 years, will enable the Biden administration to collect more information on law-abiding gun owners, all with the purpose of eventually having a registry of every gun owner in the United States, unquote. Gee, folks, you think you might want to write your congressman about this? I think so, and your senators, too. Then there was the meeting of the three amigos, Canada, America, and the United States. This is just in the last several weeks. And the pressing issue of that meeting was how the U.S. must speed up its court proceedings, you know, relative to immigration, and establishing criteria for those who are, quote-unquote, outside the scope of the policy, unquote. Well, given that there's now 50,000 illegal aliens crossing the border and purposely evading detection, that has to worry you. Not to mention the 170,000 crossing the border every month. That's every month, folks. 50,000 every month. The 170,000 crossing the border every month with their hands up saying, please take me, ship me to wherever I want to go in the United States, feed me, send me a check, you know, the whole nine yards. That should be quite a daunting task with 600,000 vanished illegal aliens in the United States just over the course of the last year. By the way, this is called the Migrant Protection Protocol, the MPP. It was actually put together by Trump, including the Remain in Mexico program, which the court has ordered be reinstated. That was 3 months ago. Mayorkas, oh yes, the DHS again, has ignored it completely. Kind of like Biden ignoring the federal courts that have ruled against the mandate and instead telling businesses that they need to continue the mandate on the vaccines. You know, who cares about the rule of law? Who cares about the Constitution? Who cares about the power of the courts? Anyway, in this Three Amigos meetings, unbelievably, Biden did not discuss immigration with the Mexican president. Yeah, they want to fix this problem. You bet they do. You bet they do. And Mayorkas says in trying to re-implement Trump's Remain in Mexico program that there's, quote, no amount of financial resources which can fix the inherent problems associated with the program, unquote. Oh, there was enough financial resources so it worked beautifully a year and a half ago, but now there's no financial resources to implement it again. Got it. Got it. Then we have the Ghislaine trial. You know, Epstein, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm bringing it to your attention because it points out the corruption at all levels of government in the United States, and particularly in the cadaver Obama administration. Obviously, there are a bunch of really big names and donors to the Democratic Marxist Party. How'd that all tie in? Who have been, tied up with Epstein in the past and Ghislaine? And, you know, the big trial, the judge that is presiding over that trial by the name of Allison Nathan. Just days before the trial of Ghislaine started. Wow, can you imagine this? She was notified that Joe Biden was going to appoint her to the Court of Appeals. Must be coincidence, don't you think? Must be coincidence. Anyway, there's a bunch of, excuse that dinging in the background. I'm on the road here. There's no way for me to turn it off. It's emails coming in. My apologies. All right. Illinois entrepreneur, former Republican gubernatorial candidate, too. Andrew Andrzejewski. He founded an outfit called Open the Books in 2011, and their entire reason for existence is to capture and disclose government spending. And it has filed 40,000 Freedom of Information Acts just in 2020. It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's kind of another judicial watch who rocks. And that encompassed $6 trillion in public expenditures, federal, state, local, the whole nine yards. You're going to love what they've come up with here. You talk about a intrusive government, okay? You talk about a government that divides people on purpose. The FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the ATF, same ATF I was talking about in the previous rat-a-tat-tat, they have paid snitches, informants, listen to this now, $548 billion, that's B, billion dollars, over the last decade. $548 billion to informants. The DEA maintains 18,000 active informants. From the beginning of October 2010, gee, who was the president? Oh, that's right, Obama. Through the end of September 2015, and paid out $237 million to 9,000 of them. The FBI paid $42 million per year to, so far, an indeterminate number of active informants over a six-year period, which ended in 2018. And the ATF paid 1,855 informants, $17.2 million, between 2012 and 2015. Each informant was paid an average, by the way, of $2,318 per year by the ATF. Imagine that. I guess you have to be careful who you talk to. Look at everybody with a jaundiced eye. Money is a fountain of corruption in Washington, D.C. There's a really cool video on the website. It's not really cool, but it'll make you gag. ASU, Arizona State University. I mean, they've long known for being a woke campus and all sorts of stuff. But these two guys, who happen to be white, are sitting quietly at this library table studying with their computers. And the computers, you know, I think they had stickers on them saying, you know, support the police or something. One of them was wearing a shirt saying, I didn't vote for Biden. And they get accosted by a number of minority, in this case, black students. And the video is unbelievable. You got to watch it. You talk about racist. The racist stickers that these people are screaming at them about in the library is the Police Lives Matter and the I Did Not Vote for Biden shirt. These guys weren't doing anything. They were minding their own business. And by the way, when they said, well, you know, they were told this is a multicultural place and you're making this space unsafe. And one of the guys said, well, isn't white a culture? And the response was, quote, white people have no culture, so you can't be here, unquote. You got to watch the video. It's pretty unbelievable. Then we have Angela Merkel. Ah, yes, what a princess, what a globalist princess she is over there in Germany. You know, she's stepping down as chancellor, so she's in her last months. But she wants to go out with a bang, folks. She wants to make sure the globalist, hob-heeled, hob-toed boot with the spikes on its soles comes down on the necks of Germans as she goes out the door. So one of her final acts as chancellor is she's going to hold talks with the 16 regional premiers. You know, that's the way Germany is structured. To discuss new curbs on people who are not vaccinated. They can't go in. They're not going to be able to go into restaurants, theaters, non-essential stores, all sorts of stuff like that. And tighter contact restrictions, and no nightclubs, and a limit of spectators at large public events. Let me quote one of the health ministers of Germany, Jens Spahn, J-E-N-S Spahn. Quote, "The most important thing is that this is virtually a lockdown for the unvaccinated. The more than 12 million adults who aren't inoculated is what is creating a challenge for the health system," unquote. You know, the pandemic of the unvaccinated, as Fauci and Cadaver like to say. Do you think these world leaders talk about this? You think they got a little fax machine that says, these are the words to use today? And then when they're all done agreeing, they send it over to CNN and MSNBC so they can use the same talking points? What do you think? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's true. All right, to finish up, rat-a-tat-tat, because we're running out of time as we always do. So there were two really good court rulings in the last week or so. There's a federal judge that halted Biden's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers. And there was another federal judge, I believe in Louisiana, who halted it for a whole bunch of other types of workers, federal contractors or the employees of federal contractors. So two really good rulings. But there was a very concerning ruling, too. And this is the third one by the Supreme Court. So Justice Breyers, without even bringing the case to the rest of the court, denied relief, denied cert, in a lawsuit that involved Massachusetts hospital workers who were challenging a vaccine mandate. Now, there's some really fine points in the law here. Was the Massachusetts facility government-owned, or was the Massachusetts facility privately owned? The really big ruling by the Supreme Court is going to be coming soon. Who knows which case? Was it some case that's going to come out of the Sixth Circuit, where they've all been consolidated at the Circuit Court of Appeal level, which we talked about last week? And the real key to that ruling is, can government, contrary to federal law and the Constitution, mandate a vaccine for anyone? As opposed to private companies, like the airlines, like perhaps this hospital in Massachusetts, like another hospital in Maine where they denied cert. It's going to be really interesting to see if they come down on the side of private companies can mandate because it's a private company and can do what it wants, but the government can't because these are experimental drugs and it's against federal law and the Constitution. We don't know the answer to that yet. I'll be keeping you posted. But as I forewarned you weeks ago, months ago, the plethora, the avalanche of lawsuits out there is not yet decided. There's a push and a pull and a pendulum swing to these cases right now. We are out of time, and we are out of rat-a-tat-tat time. One of the things I want to bring up to you next week, besides finishing up our food as a weapon historical story with what's happening in the United States and what you can do to protect yourself and your family, and by the way, benefit your country, I want to talk about what's happening at the Federal Reserve with them possibly raising interest rates, because that's not an accident, folks. It's intentional. I'll explain it to you. And I want to talk to you about what you can do to protect yourself about what's likely to happen when they do that. We have a story that goes back to the education series about California teachers enlisting elementary school children and junior high school children in gay clubs, but we just don't have time to cover it today. And a host more to talk about next week, too. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll be talking at you next week once again.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.